let's begin. Anything for me before we dive in? Yes.
I don't understand how the initial adjustment in the DDA works.
Okay, that was a topic we were going to cover some more today anyway, so we'll make sure I do that. All right, the initial adjustment. Other things you would like to talk about before we dive in? Yes?
For the quiz one, I was asking about the least code. Was it referring to like the least code for the compression algorithm?
Okay. Yeah, let's go view that again. Other questions? Yeah?
Will we actually need to step through some of the algorithms on like a test or quiz? Like the entire process?
Anything else? All right. Let's work from bottom to top. We have to step through an algorithm on a quiz or test. Well, the only test at the end of the semester is going to be made out of things we've done on the quizzes. So if not on the quizzes, then not on tests. But we'll have to do it on a test, on a quiz. Step through. There are some algorithms I think are important, and I will ask you questions you will need to be able to answer if you can do them. Such as, you know, what pixels are included in this DDA or the like. But your quizzes are open book. Right? So you can figure this out in various ways. Those kinds of questions, however, with different numbers may show up on a quiz. So on the final test. So yes, there are a few algorithms I think are important enough you should be able to work them by hand. With some careful magic to make the numbers work out right if I do that. And we also have a question about the specific quiz we just did, so let's look at the specific quiz we just did. I reviewed this a little bit and tweaked the answer key based on some ambiguity some of you all recognized. Anyway, let's run through this a little bit. But the specific question we had was about the least code questions, which was about, what, that was a BMP, SVG, et cetera. All right. So, we have four file formats, BMP, JPEG, PNG, SVG. A BMP involves like setting it a dozen bits and then just dumping all the pixel data raw. You can write the entirety of a BMP encoder from scratch in any language that understands bytes in about 20 lines of code. All of the rest of these require more, particularly with photographs. Now, SVG is actually really easy to write. Printlin will do it for you. But figuring out what to write for a photograph is quite complicated because it doesn't have the notion of pixels. PNG requires at least zlib compression and various kinds of comparing to previous pixels and encoding in different ways. JPEG requires a discrete cosine transform. So the least code, almost any way I can think of, is BMP for this question. Many of you thought SVG. I will go look and see what comments, if you wrote comments, there was there and see if there was an actual ambiguity here. But initially, I'm having difficulty imagining even how you would go about trying to write an SVG for a photograph. It would be daunting in the least, to say the least. Well, there have actually been some interesting papers recently about ways of trying to modify SVG so that it could do photographs. We may or may not talk about them later in the semester. Other thoughts and comments about the quiz. Most of this, the majority was right in most places, but sometimes a large enough minority that I was a little bit worried. Question three, I ended up rekeying because it was evident from the answers I was getting, were sort of split between narrowband and broadband, that you had no clue. And that's probably my fault. Okay, so we'll revisit this a little bit. You'll also notice sometimes a single select thing will have multiple correct answers because there are actually pigments, although not used by printers, but there are pigments that reflect or transmit instead. Anyway, I think most of the rest of these, though, I was reasonably okay with. I haven't gone and looked at what all of the wrong numbers you typed were. The fact only half of you got this one right, a little worrying to me. I will go and look at some of that and hopefully make appropriate adjustments if needed. Also for this last one, well, We ended up deciding you were sufficiently ambiguous. We accepted either answer for three of them. And anyway, we need to talk a little bit more about Bresenham today. Clearly, that was a premature question. Sorry. Anyway, so there are some things there. But let's start by talking a little bit more about broad versus narrow bandwidth of light and pigment. Not that this is a hugely important concept, but I feel bad that we talked about it and I failed to communicate that basic principle. All right. So if we consider the visible spectrum from blue to red, okay, and we have different cones, and I didn't prepare the actual image for this, right, but we have our blue cones and we have our green cones with a nice wide spectrum, and we have our red cones with a sort of slightly narrower and mostly overlapping. Okay? This is approximately the sensitivity to light we can get. Now, pigments, traditionally, we think of them as absorbing light. Okay, so a question. It is recording, but the little record notification got turned off when I upgraded to Cinnamon Bleeder, so I should downgrade that. Anyway. All right. So when we think about phosphors, we didn't spend a whole lot of time talking about this. I realized in hindsight as I was looking back at this. We want to pick phosphors that emit a wavelength. For blue, that's pretty easy, right? We pick like the area where blue sees and most other things don't. There's actually a little bit more green overlap here than I drew, but it's fairly small compared to that. And for green, it's not too bad either. We can pick sort of in the green space. We slide it slightly over from the peak response of the greens. We get a little less red. We get mostly the green wavelength responding. For red, we sort of go over here somewhat. It's not where red is most sensitive, but where red is most sensitive, it sees basically green. But this will give us most of the things we could hope to see. It doesn't give us everything, but the vast majority of colors. Okay? It's a lot harder with pigments. Okay? If I were to make a pigment, for example, that was to absorb, I want it to absorb the red light. What set of wavelengths should it absorb? I mean, clearly it should absorb these wavelengths, okay, working its way over. But when do I stop for the pigment that absorbs red and therefore looks cyan? And so maybe I pick something like that, and I want the one that absorbs green, and maybe this is a reasonable set there, and then the one absorbs blue, maybe like that. And then I have these like extra wavelengths that can still get through. So I also make a black pigment to cover the whole gamut. Okay, and this sort of works, but it makes everything look a little muddy. If I narrow those down a little bit better, it might look good in some lights and worse in others. Anyway, pigment's a lot harder than light. And because of this, professional printing typically does not stop at four colors. It is common to have 8, 10, 12 pigments for high quality printing. Or sometimes even to say, we're doing some infographic that has a whole lot of sepia, so we're gonna make a sepia pigment. This is exactly the color we want, right? So pigments are a whole lot more complicated than light. They do tend to absorb relatively broad spectrums compared to what we emit. Because if they absorbed only one or a few wavelengths, it wouldn't seem to do anything at all. It reflect almost everything. So they are relatively broad areas, especially compared to what we emit, but they're a lot harder to make because overlapping makes this messy. Anyway, I feel like I failed to communicate that earlier, so let's come back and see that. And then, in general, just as a comment, the questions that you are diverted upon on the quizzes are usually the ones I look to for making the final quiz, because they suggest there was something more nuanced. Whereas the ones you all like unanimously got, were there any of those? Yeah, like if we fix L, not a high priority for me to put on the final quiz. It looks like you already know it. Anyway, just into my mind a little bit there. Yes, and then Bresenham. I think Bresenham will be easier as we sort of come back and pick up a little bit of DDA. We were a little rushed on that before. Questions about any of these things before I jump into lines and triangles more today? Yes?
So it's a sort of broad spectrum, but why do you have 8, 10 of them in a printer?
So a typical printer will just have four. Cyan, magenta, yellow, and black. But So like the printer you buy, a color printer will have just that. But also you will notice we'll not be able to get the rich depth of colors that you would expect if you purchased it from like a professional print shop, which would have more. Because the trade-off between exactly what do we block and exactly what do we see through is a lot messier here when we're blocking off a large range of wavelengths, and what if we wanted a little bit more of that and so on. Sorry. Yeah?
So just to like reiterate, the answer you were expecting was that sort of a broad band of wavelengths?
Yeah, originally that was the correct answer, along with their close synonyms at the bottom of the list. And then I realized that you so didn't know. And so this one probably won't re-show up on a final quiz because I don't know how to ask the question, but I may try again, we'll see. All right. Before we dive into lines and triangles, I just realized I forgot. I've been forgetting repeatedly. My apologies to the people affected. We have individuals in this class who have SDAC accommodations of various sorts, including assistance with note-taking. If any of you actually take notes and would be willing to share them, I would love it if you would let me know, so that we can talk the SDAC and get those sent out to the students that for various reasons find it difficult to take notes, whether physically it's hard for them to take notes or cognitively or whatever the particular circumstance for the students in our class. Also, I have been hit or miss about beginning our lectures by describing how something looks. Anything you've noticed in the world around, you want us to talk about the optics of. That was grammatically poor. Have you noticed anything you would like me to describe how it looks? No, that's not any better. I'm not good at the grammar of this. Yes?
We still had moray patterns kind of in the...
Oh, right. Moray patterns. Yeah. All right. First off, how many of you think you could point to something and say that's a moray pattern? Okay, very few. All right. Then before we talk about what it looks like, let's talk about what it looks like. All right, moiré patterns. Moiré patterns are created when thin bands of color, let's pick this one for example. Okay, let's zoom in on this file. All right, so at a sort of a high level, when I zoom out, we see these sort of wavy lines. Okay, it looks black and white with wavy lines going more or less horizontally across it. But when I zoom in, I realize that's not what it is at all. It's lavender and green wavy lines going the other direction. Okay, and so where does this change? How does it change? So there's a few things going on. First, the purple and the green combine to black. These are complementary pigments. In this particular, they're simulating complementary pigments here. Or we can think about the other lines as being light, but most people find it easier to think about pigments for whatever reason. And so when they overlap, we get black, which creates this overall sense of it being grayscale looking when we aren't looking closely. That just has to do with what photons are being emitted or bouncing off, depending on whether we were printing this or projecting it. Then these broad patterns we see here actually can be a little bit clearer when we zoom in. We will notice that the areas that appear pale have the green and purple are directly on top of each other. So we have black and white and black and white and black and white. And the areas that appear to have this other pattern, they're completely next to each other. So we have this continual gradation of color. And as we zoom out, we will see that those areas where they don't overlap are one part of the shape, and the areas where they do are the other part. Which one will appear brighter depends on the gamma or exposure at which it's displayed. Okay? And so in this particular one, when I zoom way out, it's the places where they are next to each other that look like the dark bands, suggesting this is at such a gamma or exposure that the half and half of those areas is darker. Okay? So this is not completely gamma balanced. If it was gamma balanced, it would look fuzzy and crisp. instead of dark and light. But we will still see these patterns, and these patterns are just a side effect of where the two superimposed shapes have their lines next to each other versus not. It's actually a similar mechanical principle to the diffraction grating and so on we talked about in class, which causes constructive and destructive interference, although significantly more reduced in character. You don't have to do it with wavy lines. You can also do it with straight lines. Let's see if we have a good straight line example. Yeah. Straight lines aren't as cool to look at. Oh, that's actually a pretty bad one. Well, you can do it with straight lines. Apparently, they don't image search those because they aren't as cool to look at. Those are almost straight lines. This is a fair particular. This is an interesting example for a different reason. Okay, here we have almost parallel lines with slight curves. So although you probably, when just glancing at the lines up here, don't notice there's a slight wave to them, when that slight wave hits the slight wave of this, we can get these very dramatic, where black overlaps black, we get white, where black overlaps white, we get black. So we get these strong visual effects. Moiré patterns are created with regular overlapping things that aren't quite aligned. So if you want to create one yourself, grab a screen, grab another screen, tilt them a tiny bit. Ta-da! Moiré patterns. You can do them with other things like that as well. Questions about Moiré patterns? Yes?
Are these the reason why when you like take a picture of the screen with another camera, it looks really weird?
It's one of several reasons. But one reason a camera picture of a screen might look weird is because the screen actually has a grid inside it, and your camera has a grid inside, and if they aren't perfectly aligned, weird things result. There are other reasons, such as most screens sort of have this periodic refresh, and so does the camera has a periodic exposure, and both of those are fast enough most people don't notice them, but sometimes they combine in weird ways. It's more effective, more visible on things like CRTs than LCDs, but yeah, there's various reasons. And the third reason they can have that is actually because of this phenomena, okay? The camera has, in general, different curves than you do. Okay, it's hard to make a camera that's exactly like your eye, and so the camera's receptive zones typically are not these nice same exact matches, but we're emitting these very narrow wavelengths, so we'll tend to see colors differently, because this will be differently exposed than our eye would expect. All right, let's dive back into lines and triangles. BDA and Bresenham. So let's just try to briefly summarize what we said about DDA before. I want to draw a line between two points. The way I am going to do this is I am going to figure out all of the places where the actual mathematical line happens to have an integer x, if I'm stepping in x. So I want to know, and this is a point that I may not have mentioned clearly enough. When I am putting a grid over things, I am not using the grid you learned in math class, where the lines are integers. I am using the grid that represents pixels, where the pixels are at integers. So the integers are in the middles, in the white space, in the center of the boxes, because that's how pixels work. Okay? So my integer x's are here, and here, and here, and so on. Okay? These are my integer x's. And then I also have some y coordinates at each of those integer x's. And to find the y coordinates, the main thing the DDA algorithm does is it figures out the vector offset that goes between two of those points. The x of that will always be 1. Because we design it to go exactly from one integer x to the next integer x. Huzzah! It's going to be 1. The y is going to be the total rise of the line divided by the total run of the line. So in this case, it looks like I went One, two, three, four. Let's say that's 4.5. And I went over 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, not quite 8, 7.8. And so this here would be 4.5 divided by 7.8. This, we could say it's 1, but it's really 7.8 divided by 7.8. So we're just dividing this total vector by its length in x to get the offset vector. And that will get me from one integer x to the next integer x, but it won't get me to the first integer x. When I'm given the line, I'm given its endpoints, which in general are not integers. And so to find the first integer x that is on the line, I need to figure out this other offset. Okay? And that other offset I find by figuring out how far I need to go to become an integer. Let's say, I don't know, that looks like it might be a 0.7, maybe. And then instead of going up by this number, does anybody want to pull out a calculator and find out what that number is? Oh, I could do that. What am I thinking? All right, that is 4.5 divided by 7.8, 0.57 something. Okay. So instead of going up 0.57 like I would usually do, I'm going to go up a smaller subset of that because I'm only going over 0.7, not 1. And so I'm going to go over 0.7 times 0.57, which is about 0.4 that I will go up here. Okay. So this first point I will find by moving over to an integer and moving up just enough to stay on the line. Question?
How did you know how to get to the integer, the first point?
Well, I knew what I would, so presumably I would actually have real coordinates here. Let's see if we can zoom in enough that I can make coordinates. This will have some number. I will be given this point. No, it'll be a coordinate. It'll be like an xy coordinate, right? It'll be some x, some y, and in general it won't be an integer. And let's just arbitrarily say, okay, if this is an integer, that's sort of, that would be something like, I don't know, let's just arbitrarily say that's 4.3, and I'm a little below, so that's maybe, I don't know, like 8.7, whatever I'm given.
Okay.
And with what I'm given, I want to go to the next integer. So I want to go to the next integer in x, which means I want to go to 5 in x. And I want to know what is the y of that spot. Okay, so 5 is 0.7 more than 4.3. And so that's where this 0.7 came from. And then I add to that the 0.41, or the 0.4 rather, to get me to 9.1.
So when you round to the nearest integer, that's effectively the midpoint of the
line. I do not round to the nearest integer here. I round to the integer inside the line segment. The nearest integer to 4.3 is 4, but that's before I start the line segment. So I go to the one that is inside the line segment.
And that depends on the sign then?
It depends on where the other endpoint is. Yes?
So the first pixel that will be colored in is the one at 5.
It would be the pixel closest to 5, 9.1, which is this pixel, 5, 9. That would be the first pixel on my line. And then each subsequent pixel, I would add 0.57 to the y, and I would add 1 to the x. So this next pixel here, I would have added 1 to the x to get 6, and I've added 0.57 to my y to get 9.67, which will be rounded up to 10. So I've filled in 5, 9, I would have filled in 6, 10. Question?
Sorry, it's a dumb question, but when you say rounded to the nearest to the line segment, how are you determining that?
I don't remember saying those words, so try to tell, which rounding are you having trouble with?
The 4.3 to 5.
How did I know? Because I knew this was at 4.3 and I knew it needed to be an integer, so I just subtracted. I said, the next biggest integer is 5. I am at 4.3. How different are they? 0.7. That was just subtraction. How did I know what integer it was? That was the ceiling or floor function, depending on whether I'm going up or down. Yes.
Do you not have to do like another like initial different size arrow at the end of it too?
I don't, because I'm never actually going to get there.
Okay.
Let's go ahead and finish this line. All right, I have 6, now I'm going to have 7, and I'm adding, I really should have not tried to do this offhand. I'll have a more prepared example later. All right, 0.47 plus 9 point, that is going to be 10 point, what's that, 2.4. I might be doing my math wrong, but what I'm trying to do is add the rise of the 1 pixel offset, and I'm always going over 1 pixel. So this one is going to be 8, and that's going to be 10.57 and 2.4 is 7, is 8, 1. And then I'm going to be at 9 and 11, 5, 7 plus that is going to be plus 3, 8. And then I'm going to be at 10, and I'm adding 5, 7 to that, which is going to be 11.95. And then I'll be at 11, and I'm adding 0.57 to that, so that's going to be 12.52. And then I'll be at 12, and plus 0.57, 13.09. Okay, and so those are all of the raw points. I had the offset once. Do I need to get the offset to this last point? No, I don't. How do I know I am done? I would probably write my code so that I would actually go ahead and find this point and then notice it was too far over and stop. Because that's how we usually write for loops. Right? We compute the next thing and realize it's too big. You don't have to do it that way. You could say, I know that it will be too big and stop before I compute it. Yes?
When you're choosing which pixel to fill?
Yeah.
How do you round the y-coordinate?
So the y's for drawing a line, we usually round to nearest. And in the write-up, I decide whether you round up or down if it's exactly 0.5. I don't remember which one I have, but I have the floor symbol plus, I think it's floor point plus 0.5, which will be rounding down effectively. No, rounding up effectively. But yeah, I picked one for consistency for this assignment. For lines, if we round up or down and it's exactly 0.5, who really cares? We'll care a lot with triangles, as we'll see in a moment, though. Yes?
So just to clarify, to find the offset vector, so you have that initial vector, which is like, so you're stepping in x, so it's like 1
yep.
on a slope or whatever.
Yeah, so I have this vector here, which was 1 because I'm stepping in x, and 0.57, which I got from that.
So
yep.
And the offset vector would just be that multiplied by like the difference in the roundup of x minus x.
Yes, so I find this roundup distance of 0.7, and then I get this vector here by multiplying this by 0.7. So I get 0.7, because 0.7 times 1 is 0.7, and then I multiplied 0.7 by 0.57 to get 0.41. Other questions? Yes?
So can you explain one more time, how did you get the initial rise,
0.41. I did by multiplying 0.7 by 0.57. Other questions? Yes? Right here? So I didn't draw this very well. You'll notice this number here is 10.81, so I would draw pixel 11. It looks like that should be more like 0.105 or something for the way I drew it. But I would just take the number that comes out and use that for my rounding. Other questions? Okay. Now, there's been a series of questions on Piazza, all based on, what about this weird integer endpoint thing? So we're now going to talk about the integer endpoint thing. And to do that, I'm going to ignore y for a moment. We'll come back and talk some more about y in a minute. But if I'm stepping in x, okay, if I am stepping between, so we just drew this line segment, and you notice that I picked only the points that were inside. I want the ones inside the line segment only. The reason I want the ones inside the line segment will matter more for some other things we're going to do, but imagine this is part of a polyline, right? Another line after it, and another line after that. I don't want to draw a pixel more than once and have the potential of having overlap or alpha not working. So if each of these only draws the things that are inside, I'll draw them each once. But this causes a problem if it just so happens that the meeting point is exactly on a pixel. Which line gets it? Okay? And we just decide, as long as we decide consistently. Now we need to decide consistently regardless of the direction we said we are drawing the line. Because we don't in general know what direction. So we're going to decide based on left, right, top, bottom. The decision that is I have made for the homework assignments, just so we all make the same one, is we include the small and exclude the large. This is what programming often does, right? So if they happen to be exactly integers, it's the only time we need to do special logic. And if that happens in the case, we include it if it's the small side and exclude if it's the large. And that way, that intersection point will be included only by one of the lines that might meet that spot. Question?
Small in which dimension?
In number. So if I'm stepping in x, small in x. If I'm stepping in y, small in y.
Okay.
Yes?
So if we're stepping in x, but we start on an n log, like a y integer, we don't need to worry about that?
No, we only need to worry about the direction we're stepping on. Other, yes?
I don't know if I'm misunderstanding. So like if the second line that you had there on the right was like steep and you stepped in y for that one, and you stepped in x for the...
Then you would use one of them in x and one of them in y. The reason we do this is actually not so much for lines as it is for triangles, but if you can get it right for the lines, it'll make more sense for the triangles. We'll see why this really matters for triangles in just a moment. Yeah?
If your x and y have like the same slope, which direction are you stepping in?
If your x and, like if x equals, if the x offset equals the y offset,
yeah.
Pick one. It turns out that your rounding will not matter either for that case. It'll do the same thing in both directions. Most of the time. Okay. Lines are not usually what we draw. We usually draw polygons. We usually draw areas. But we do them by drawing lines. We're going to work through a detailed example that I pre-computed the numbers so the math will work out nice and it will have the weird edge cases. I spent a lot of time going through different triangles until I found what I thought would work. But before we do that, let's talk about the general concept of how we draw a triangle by drawing lines. We're just going to hand wave how this will work and then we'll walk through it in detail. So, I want to draw a triangle. Triangles let us draw everything else by breaking them into triangles. Okay? So we're just going to say, I'm just going to draw a triangle. I'm going to draw a triangle, but what I know how to do is draw lines. So here is how we're going to do it conceptually. I am going to step in Y all of the edges of the triangle and find out where the actual X coordinates of their integer Y's. Okay, so I'm going to step in y, the edges, and not round the y, the x. Okay, so I'm not going to do any rounding, I'm going to get the actual x's. And then I'm going to take pairs of x's on the same y, and I'm going to step them, finding the integer x's. And fill the x's that were inside the line. There is nothing to round here because I will get exactly integer coordinates. I will already have integer y's because I found the endpoints by stepping in y, and I'll get integer x's because I'm stepping in x. And I will do that for each of these line segments. Okay, so I'll do this for each of them. For every single one. And as I do this, because I'm going to always end up with integer x's and integer y's, I'm going to end up with the exact set of pixels, the center of the pixels of which are inside the triangle. Question?
What do you mean by the x is also an integer?
So when I step in y up the, so this is step one, and then step two is I'm going to step in X between edge points. I don't know what the right thing to call these things are. Okay, so stepping in Y created a pair of edge intersections with the same Y. And then I'm going to step in X between those. Since I'm stepping in X, I'll get integer X's. Because I created the endpoints by stepping in Y, they already have an integer Y's. And therefore, these points will be integer points. Or pixel centers. Does this answer your question? Other questions about the broad outline of the concept? Yes?
Wait, so you do every pair?
I do every pair that has the same Y. So I run over and over and over again. We call this a scan line family of algorithms because we are filling in lines. Why are they called scan lines? Because old CRT monitors, there was physically an electron that zipped across the screen in things called scan lines. And if you could get your algorithm fast enough, you could compute all of the pixels that needed to light up as the scan line went across the screen. We don't have scan lines physically in our computers anymore, but this still turns out to be efficient memory. So frame buffers and other ways of storing pixels tend to make this an efficient way of generating the pixels, better than going vertical. So we always step in Y up the edges and then X across the middle, so we generate our pixels in an order that memory likes to see, in the scan line order. So, questions about the concept. All right, we're going to work through an example that I carefully constructed to be interesting and not have infinite decimals. Okay. So, the endpoints here are going to look weird because, you know, I carefully constructed them. We're going to say this is 1.854. This is going to be 11.85, 1.5. And this is where it looks really weird, 13.89. 8.3. Magic numbers picked to keep things rounding nicely and give me integers in places that will let us talk about why integers matter. Okay, so if these are my points, step one is to step in Y each of the edges. Okay, I just talked about how to step in Y. There's no magic happening here. It's the same algorithm we just talked about. Let's give you a minute or two to try it out. Pick an edge and try to step in Y and figure out what the x-intercepts are. I will say, if you find yourself needing more than two decimals of precision, you did some math wrong. Okay, you will never need more than two decimals places beyond the period for exact math with these particular endpoints. So pick an edge, try to walk it, work with your neighbor if you want, and then in a minute or two we'll walk through what you ought to have found.
Is that 1.5 or 3?
1.5, sorry, yes. I should write more clearly if I'm having you work off of my handwriting. And that's a 3 up there.
Yeah.
To explain before I run through the example. Things as you're doing this, you're like, I don't actually know how to. Maybe he can explain it again. Yeah.
Offsets.
All right. I'll have to compute three of them along the way here, so that will help, hopefully. Okay. Let me start with the easiest of the three edges. Okay. The easiest of the three edges is this one. Because what is its rise and what is its run? It is rising 2.5 pixels. It is running 10 pixels. If I'm stepping in y, what is the offset to get from one y to the next? It is going to be, so the total thing is 2.5, 10. No, I have that backwards. 10, 2.5. That's an important difference. Right, and if it's 10 in x, it's negative 2.5 in y. But I'm stepping in y, so I'm actually going to say it's 2.5 and negative 10. So for I'm stepping in y, I want the y to be positive. You can compute the other way, it wouldn't matter, because the next thing I'm going to do is divide by the step in y. I'm going to divide by 2.5. If I made a negative 2.5, I'd divide by negative 2.5. Either way, I will end up with a step of negative 4, 1. Integers. We love integers. Math is easier with integers. Yes?
How did you get the negative sign? I know you said it was a negative 2.5, but
You pick one of these pairs and subtract it from the other to get this vector. Whichever way you do it, one will be positive, the other negative, and then you'll divide and you'll get up with this exact number. Okay? So this is the offset that gets me from one pixel to the next. Now, if I started here, life would be easy, but we always are going to start with the smaller end first just to make things, because that's how computers work. So I'm starting here with 1.5 in y. That isn't an integer. I need to make it an integer. I make it an integer by multiplying the overall offset by how far off from integer it is. The first y I want to use is going to be the first y bigger than this, which is 2. So I need to figure out how, so I need to go the difference between 2 and 1.5 is 0.5. So my first little initial offset here will be half of this. So I'm going to end up going negative 2 in x and 1 half in y to get my first point here. So that first point here is going to be 9.852. And then we talk about any of those pieces you want me to go back over slower. Yes?
I see that you got a point with the black point is 2, but like, how did you know that you could do negative 2 next?
So I knew the generally I'd have to go negative 4, and I'm going half a pixel up, so I'm going half of that distance.
Okay.
I multiply this number by the amount I need to rise. I need to rise half a pixel, so I multiply that by 1/2. Okay? Rather than iterating the rest of this, let's talk about how to do that for the other sides. Okay? So we can see that initial step on all of the edges. This edge here has a rise of 6.8, and it has a run of 2.04, which magically, division, means that my single step has a y of 1 and an x of 2.04 divided by 6.8, which is 0.3. Magic. You're welcome to do the division to verify this if you want. Okay? So that's going to be my normal thing, but again, I start half a pixel too low. So my first step is going to be half of that. So my first step to get me up here to having a 2 in y, I know I'm going to have a 2, is going to go half of that from here, which is going to get me to exactly 12. So that's that first little offset there. And then we have the weird one. All right. This run is 13.89 divided by 1.85, or 12.04. And this rise is 8.3 divided by 4, or 4.3. Okay? So my step to get me from one pixel to the next is again going to have a 1 in y, because that's how we're constructing it. Okay? And its x is going to be 12.04 divided by 4.3. Yes?
You mean minus? Sorry. Earlier when you said, I think you meant to say minus, like when you were calculating the minus of y, but you said divide.
I may have. I should not have done any divisions yet. So if I said divide, I probably meant minus. Sorry. So just to iterate, 12.04 is 13.89 minus 1.85, and 4.3 is 8.3 minus 4. 1 is 4.3 divided by 4.3. And then here, I need 12.04 divided by 4.3, which I believe, if memory serves, is 2.8. And you're welcome to do the division to verify that. Okay, so that would be the offset between a pair of pixels. But to get to the first one, what do I need to do? Nothing. I am zero away from an integer. Okay, so I would multiply this by 0 to add it to that to get my first point, which is going to be exactly where I started. Okay, now, this is an integer endpoint case. I kept this because I'm at the low end of stepping in y. If I was at the high end, I would have skipped it. Because I'm at the low end, I include it. Include low, exclude high. That's going to matter as we come up this side. We don't want to also generate that point. Because we only want it once, not twice. Okay? So I've generated my three starting points. And from each of these, I can generate all of the other points on the line just by continually adding whatever the offset was. Before I do that, question.
If that bottom point then, instead of 1.5 was 2, wouldn't you include it twice if you're stepping?
I would. And that will actually be important. We'll talk about that example here in a moment. We won't see it for here, but that will actually be a vital piece of the next step. So we'll come back to that. Yes?
So with 11.5, you have to change it to 12.2 because 1.5 has to be 2.
Because I need to, the y's need to get up to the next inside integer.
And then you got the 12 from.
I get the 12 from saying the normal offset would be 0.3, but I'm only going half of that to get up, so I'm adding 0.15. And it's half because this is exactly one half below the integer. Yes?
So I thought we usually did things by looking at the longest length of the line.
So when we're doing triangles, we always do the edges in y. Because we're about to do the other side in x, so we have to always do the same side. It's only, look at the longest if we're worrying about drawing the line, not filling the triangle.
Okay.
So it's just always edges in y, always scan lines in x. We will see that it will work. Okay. So now I just add the offsets. Let's go up this side first because it has fewer digits. So this point here will be 12.33. And 12.64, and 12.95, and 13.26, and 13.57, and 13.88. And then I stop because I went up farther, I'd pass 8.3 in y. So that's the last one I will do. So that's all of the points on that side. Similarly for other sides, this one needs to go negative 4, 1. So the next spot I'm going to see is over here. It's going to be 5.853. And the point after that would be 1.854. But I do not generate it again. It's an integer, the big side of my stepping in y, so I exclude it. And I could also do the other sides. I'm not going to do all of this because I want to talk about other things too, right? So I start with this. I would add 2.81 to that, so I'm going to get 4.655, et cetera, on up that row. Yes?
When you say big side of generating y.
I'm stepping in y, so it's the big end of the y range. So I exclude it. Y goes from 1.5 to 4.
Yeah.
4 is larger than 1.5. I'm at the 4 end, I exclude. Okay. Questions? All right. So this generates me all these offsets. Now what I do to generate the pixels is I fill between pairs on the same y. So fill between these and I'll find the integer x's between them. So the integer x's between 9.85 and 12 are 10, 11, and 12, but 12 is the big end, so I don't include it. Because I'm stepping from 9.85 to 12, so I exclude the big integer. Okay, here I have 5.85, so I will have 6, 7, 8, 9, 10, 11, and 12. Here I'm going from 1.85, so I'd have 2, 3, 4, 5, 6. Let me arbitrarily change colors in the middle here so we can see what I'm doing. 7, 8, 9, 10, 11, 12. Okay, and I'll just do this for all of them. This could just be a simple for loop. The y's are already integers, the x's are going to become integers, although that won't work for color, as we'll talk about in a moment. We'll really want to do this like a DDA, but essentially this is all we're doing. And thus we generate all of the pixels whose centers are inside the mathematical triangle. If we had generated this point twice, we would have a problem. We would have 3 points on this row. And how does a computer know which two of the 3 points to fill between? That's why we need to be careful about our endpoints if they happen to be integers. Yes?
How do you store the edge points?
You don't need to store them. You could say, I know I will always have two edges at any given y. I'm going to step up those two edges and fill along the way. Or you could say, I'm going to make a list of all the pairs of x's. Or you could, there's lots of ways you can do this. And we have 5 or 6 different common implementations in this course students use. So do what makes sense to you. Question?
So you're just printing as the algorithm is running. That's basically.
Yeah, you can generate these pixels in real time without storing anything more than a couple of numbers. Or you can say, I love lists, and you can use lists for everything. We're not measuring speed, so have fun. Many of you will find it easier to think about if you generate all of the points, store them in some sort of list, sort those, and do things like that. That's fine. It's less efficient than the other way, but we're trying to get across the concept of how it works rather than the last little cycle of efficiency. Okay. Thoughts, comments, questions about this algorithm? All right. Now let's talk about why it really matters that we get all of the boundary cases right. One of them we have seen. One of them is that this is an integer, so it needs to have only 2 points or else our algorithm gets confused. Okay? That's one case. An arguably more important case is usually we do fancier shapes by splitting them into triangles, because triangles are fast. We don't have to do that. We could walk all of the edges of the bigger shape in Y and then find all pairs of things. We'll talk about that with fill rules a little bit later. But if we assume we're doing it with triangles, and if I had some integer here, I want to make sure that I only fill it once and not twice and not 0 times. Not 0 times, there isn't a hole. Not twice in case they happen to be transparent. So I don't see little floaties where the transparent things stack on top of each other. We want to fill each pixel exactly once. And so being careful about our endpoints and only filling the pixels that are actually in the inside will guarantee that we do that even when things are lined up and happen to bump into integers. And then the other case as mentioned, what if my bottom vertex of my triangle happened to be at an integer y? I will generate this point twice. Okay? Probably it won't be an integer. And so then when I come to fill in x, I might be filling from, say, 3.8 to 3.8. What integers are between 3.8 and 3.8? None. So I won't fill that pixel. I might be really weirdly lucky and have this be an integer-integer. So I might be filling between 3 and 3. And here I have, I'm going from the including the left endpoint, excluding the right. It turns out exclude wins if you really want to make sure you never have double drawn pixels. So we wouldn't draw this either. Okay? But these are cases. We also might have cases where we have a horizontal edge in my triangle. And when I try to step this edge in Y, The second step involves dividing by the offset in y, which is 0, which it breaks everything. That's fine. I just pretend the line wasn't there. Okay? Because I'll end up creating the endpoints on either side and filling between them, and everything's fine. So horizontal edges, you can just throw them away as if they didn't exist, without breaking anything at all. Okay? Because the next step will deal with the horizontal when we're stepping in x. Okay? So there are lots of weird corner cases, but if you're careful about how you do it, they'll all just behave correctly, which is why I've emphasized endpoints and so on along the way. Questions? All right. Let's briefly go back to what Bresenham did. Bresenham's algorithm didn't find all of these non-integer numbers. It treated them all, it first assumed the endpoints were integers, and then assuming the endpoints were integers, it used sort of implicit fractions to decide when to go up or down a line. That will work fine for lines. It will not work without major modifications for triangles, because it will tell me that this pixel here is included on the Bresenham algorithm, because the little thing I am using to decide when I move up in Y will have said move up in Y one there. But this is outside of the triangle. And that will cause a problem if I try to do that with a triangle algorithm. So Bresenham is an optimization primarily for integer endpoint lines. If you have non-integer endpoints or you have triangles, it doesn't work particularly well. There are ways of making it work using fixed point arithmetic or rational numbers, and anyway, and sometimes hardware does that, but it turns out to really be essentially the DDA algorithm they're emulating there in its full glory with non-integers and everything in order to make nice pictures. So Bresenham is really just an optimization for lines and also for strange curves, as we'll talk about probably tomorrow, Thursday, maybe next week. Okay. So this is the algorithm. This is the algorithm that is implemented in hardware several thousand times in each and every one of your laptops and phones. This is the algorithm that draws the world. Okay? We're missing, however, one important extension that requires no more work for hardware, but a lot more work for student brains. Okay? And that is interpolation. Let's just talk about the word first. Interpolation means to find between or inside, as opposed to extrapolation, which is to find beyond or outside. Hey? We don't extrapolate computer graphics very often at all. We usually interpolate. And usually we linearly interpolate. Hey? What do we mean by linearly interpolating? Let's suppose I have some line. I want to draw a line from here to here, but I want it to be blue down here, and I want it to be red over here. Okay? How do I know what color it is right there? The principle, the concept, which is not how we'll implement it, but the concept is, I'm going to figure out the relative distance. So I'm going to call this distance alpha and this distance beta. I have drawn them x aligned. It turns out the relative distance doesn't matter how I align it. It'd be the same relative distance if I aligned it in y. If I aligned it along the line, they'll all be the same relative distance because it's a line. Okay? And then I'm going to say this thing has beta blue plus alpha red divided by alpha plus beta. This is the definition of linear interpolation. It's the definition of linear function. If you remember linear algebra, this will be vaguely familiar depending on how you learned it. Okay? If you try to put this in with x's and y's, this will be a linear equation. This is linear. This is what we mean by line. Now, computing this for every point along the way is painful for the computer because we're doing a whole lot of divisions. Now we can find that divisor just once and turn it into a multiplicand by finding its ratio inverse. Anyway, it's still messy. We still have to multiply every step. We don't want to do that. Fortunately, there's this really cool algorithm for linear interpolation. It's called DDA. Okay? Let's think about what we did in DDA. I stepped here in X. And I found y's. How did I find y's? By linearly interpolating the endpoint y's. If I did everything I did with y with any other number, I would linearly interpolate that number too. Okay? Exactly the same math all the way along. Let's do a very small example of what that might look like. Okay, so I'm going to make a short line. I'm going to make a line from here to here so that we have few steps to do. Okay? So let's say that this is, I don't know, 1, 2, so that's going to be like 2.8 in x, and 1 in a bit, so I'm going to say that's like 1.3 in y, and if that's 2, so that's like 2.8 in y, maybe that's more like a 7, I don't know, I'm not great at eyeballing this. And then in x, if that was 2.8, that's 3, 4, 5, so that's like a 5.3, maybe, something like that. There are my points. I'm just quite arbitrarily going to throw in another number. Let's suppose that this pixel also has 11 red, and this pixel has 211 red. Okay? I can throw as many extra numbers as I want. And all I've really done is just make the vector longer. All of the math is going to just treat it like a vector. So I find this offset vector. Okay? This offset vector is 5.3 minus 2.8, which is 2.5. Right? Yes. It is 2.7 minus 1.3, which is 1.4. And it is 211 minus 11, which is 200. It's a vector. If I am stepping in x, I will then divide this vector by its x-coordinate to find the step that gets me from one pixel to the next. So I'll divide that by x. So I end up with 1. Okay, so 1.4 divided by 2.5 is going to be, I could do this, it's going to be 5.6, right? No, that can't be. 4.56. 0.56, yes, I was off by a factor of 1. All right, thank you. And 200 divided by 2.5, that should be 8e. Okay, so that is my offset between two consecutive spaces. And then I need my initial offset. I need to move over 2 in x to get to an integer x, or 0.2. So I'm going to multiply that by 0.2 to find this initial offset. So my initial offset then is going to be 0.2. It's going to be 0.2 times 0.56, which is going to be 0.112. And it's going to be 0.2 times 80, which is going to be 16. Okay, and so that first pixel that I'm going to find here, that pixel is going to be this plus that. So that is going to be, in particular, this pixel right here is going to be 3. It's going to be 1.3 plus 0.012, which is going to be 1.412. And it's going to be 11 plus 16, which is 27. And then to find the next pixel up the line, I'm going to add this one pixel offset to this pixel I already found. So that one's going to be 4. That's going to be 1.972 and 107. Okay? And I would do it one more time to find this other point, but I don't want to do the math. Question about how this works? Yes?
So how's that faster than the method you described before? Is this something divided every step?
How many divisions have I done? I did one per term. That's it.
Is that not what you would do with the other method?
The other method, I'd have to do one per term per pixel. Where did I put that? Okay. Because this thing needs to be separately divided for each of these pairs. Right? Are there ways of making this work? There are, but then they involve weird multiplications. And with either multiply or divide, multiple per step instead of just once. Okay? And this is why I say that we DDA across the line in x. That's how we linearly interpolate in x, is we use DDA. Sure, the x and the y are easy. But whatever else we're carrying around, the red, the green, the blue, the color, the texture coordinate, whatever it is, all of those still need DDA to find out what they are. Weirdly, because triangles are linear, it turns out the offsets are going to be constant across this in some ways, not in others. Anyway, there are optimizations we can do so we avoid even more divisions here if we want. You're welcome to play around with that a little bit if you want, or just implement it naively and it will work fine. But we end up DDAing up the edges in Y and across the middle in X, and that gets us all of the reds, greens, blues, and everything else we need at every single pixel in the scene. Questions about the magic DDA algorithm? All right, and now you have the fun of implementing it. This can be fairly short, as many graphics algorithms can. That doesn't mean it can be particularly simple. Hey, you're going to see this if you haven't already. Most people's code for this involves like 3 or 4 nested loops with nested if statements maybe too deep as well. Or lots of function calls to get rid of all of the nesting. Okay? Are there shorter versions? There are, but they're always, even if they all fit on a screen in giant font, they tend to still be fairly complicated. So go carefully, test things by hand to see if they're doing the right thing, and move forward. Yeah.
We talk about arbitrary polygons. How do we choose the triangle, the line to draw for like the triangles to where the wires are?
Yeah, great question. So if we're doing an arbitrary polygon, is that arbitrary enough? It is possible to turn this into triangles. You can prove this, although this is one that requires you to insert additional vertices. Okay? We don't want to do that. What we do instead is we just do all of the edges. So on this scan line here, let's pretend that's a scan line, I'd find that point and that point and that point and that point. And then I would just fill between pairs of points. This doesn't work well for interpolation of color, because this is no longer linear under the hood. There are other ways of filling between points that we probably don't have time to get to today, but we may. Yes?
How do you decide which ones pair with each other? Like, how do you decide which of those?
Adjacent in X is the simplest rule. That's called the even-odd rule. So there's two basic rules. This one, there's only one consistent coloring of this triangle. All of the ways of doing it will color this, or this polygon, this, 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 and this. But that isn't always the case. Some of them will have multiple ways they could be colored. Okay? Should I fill in that pixel? There are two rules. Okay? So there's two common rules for how you fill in complicated polygons. Note, this is optional, you don't have to do this, right? But let's still talk about how it goes, because it is important to understand how we do this. There are the two rules. There are the even-odd rule, and then there is what we call the widening number rule. All right, even-odd is easier to describe. I find all of the intersections that exist, I sort them in X, and then I fill between an even one and an odd one, an even one and an odd one. And that will leave that center spot unfilled. Okay? This is the even-odd rule. I fill between adjacent pairs after I sort them in X. The winding number rule is weirder. Let's redraw this so we can talk about the winding number rule. First, before that, questions about the even-odd rule. Okay, I have traditionally asked quiz questions where I'll draw strange polygons and ask you to tell me if some spot is filled with even odd or winding or not. So right, FYI, coming up. All right, if I draw that same polygon, the winding number rule works as follows. We pick an order to navigate the edges. Maybe I will say we're going this direction around it. Okay, so we are winding our way around the polygon. Often they are given in some sort of order, so we'll just use that order. It actually doesn't matter what order we pick, as long as it's consistent all the way around. So we have to sort of cycle around the edges. And then for any given row that we're intersecting, we figure out, were we going up up or down on each of them. And what we technically call this is the non-zero winding rule. As we work our way along this, we start at zero outside of the shape. And every time we hit an up, we add one. And every time we hit a down, we subtract one. And if the answer isn't zero, we fill it in. Okay? This is the rule. So we will fill in this spot where it overlaps. But if we were to look at a different row down here, we would see we would have zero, we add one, but this one is going down, so we'd subtract one, then we'd add one, and we'd subtract one. So this region in here would not be filled. The non-zero winding rule will give us the idea that it's setting on top of itself. Okay? So this region in here is sort of empty, but we've sort of taken a strip of paper and laid it on top of itself, so where it overlaps gets filled, but where there was a hole, it doesn't. Whereas the even-odd rule will say where it overlaps, it doesn't get filled. Both of these are commonly used. If you pull up a vector graphics program and say, draw a polygon, you can make it do either one of them. They're both available, and this is how they work. Questions about even-odd winding? All right, I realize I didn't take all the questions you probably had about triangles. We'll come back and do some of that on Thursday. Hey, we'll see you all on Thursday.